Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing business. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Betsy Lerner. She's all of the things that you could imagine in the book business. She's been an editor, an agent, a writer. Hi, Betsy. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you on and talk to you. You do have a pretty broad background, which makes it, I think, interesting to have your perspective, since today you're, I would say, an independent professional and a literary agent. Maybe you could talk a little bit just about your background so that people who are listening who may not know who you are will know who you are.
Oh, sure. Well, I actually, after college, I went and I worked a little, and then I got my MFA in poetry. And I did not feel that I could pursue the life of a poet with enough success. So I went into publishing, where I did discover that I loved editing and had somewhat of a knack for it. And I worked my way up from editorial assistant to executive editor at four different publishing companies over 16 years. And right at the moment that I crossed over to become an agent, I also had written and was about to publish my first book, The Forest for the Trees. And the question I get most often is, why did I become an agent? And for me, it was really threefold. One, I had started writing again after a long hiatus of not writing, of 15 years of not writing. I was starting to write again, and I found that very exciting. And also, I had just had a child, and I really wanted flexible hours, which publishing companies were not all that willing to do. And the third was, I found it increasingly difficult to hold on to my authors. Authors would move houses often, you know, because you couldn't give them enough money to stay. And I just wanted to work with a stable of people over time. And I knew that as an agent, that's something that I could hopefully possibly accomplish. And so I've been an agent now for 10 years. And during that time, I also wrote a memoir. And I've recently revised my writing book, The Forest for the Trees. I updated it for, so much has happened in the last 10 years. And I'm a blogger now as well. So that's sort of the professional stuff in a nutshell.
Well, and it's pretty interesting. And in fact, what got me interested in talking to you was reading an article you wrote in Publishing Perspectives, and that got me to go read your blog. So let's talk about kind of, as you referred to it, the changes that have occurred in the business over the last 10 years and how that affects writers and the kind of advice that you give them today. You know, in the piece that you wrote, the kind of lead was provocative, should I tweet? I think it's addressing some of the issues for writers in terms of their public and social persona, but it's also relates to their responsibilities as the author to be involved in the promotion of their book or books. And, you know, kind of maybe you could talk a little bit about how that's changed since you became involved in publishing and how you see that evolving.
Well, on some level, it hasn't changed all that much. When I was acquiring books or trying to sign books, even when I was an associate editor, a baby editor, the publisher always wanted to know, what is the author's platform? What have they done? What's their reach in the marketplace? So that question, for the 25 years that I've been in publishing, that has not changed. But what has changed is the fact that there are now so many more ways for authors to get a platform, to get an audience, to find their market. And so the expectations, I think, on the part of publishers is higher, that they do some of this stuff and get involved in some of the social networking that's available, or using the internet to find niche markets. I think that's really what's changed. The need for authors to help find their markets, that's a constant.
But do you think that, I mean, because I feel this coming from writers all the time when I talk to them, that they feel that they're being asked to do things perhaps on a different level today. Not just publishers asking them, but the sort of zeitgeist of what they read when they talk, when you go online and you read about all the resources now that exist, tell writers you must be involved in social media. You know, you need to have a blog, you need to have a website, you need to be on Facebook, you need to be on LinkedIn. These are requests or requirements that differ in a way. I mean, obviously, as you say, that it was always true that authors had to promote their books, but it was more compartmentalized, it feels like. Go out on a tour for a period of time when your book comes out. Work with the media when your book comes out. But the social media is really a full-time, ongoing, 24-hour-a-day requirement. Having a blog, as you do, requires you to write regularly, engaging with your audience in some way. And I think some writers, at least, express the concern that that is a different dynamic than they're used to doing or they're comfortable doing.
There have always been people who were great at self-promotion, and there were always people who sucked at it. And that's really what I think. You know, it's not a requirement. It will enhance your ability to sell your book and get your book attention down the road. And every writer wants that. My favorite example really of all time is Walt Whitman, who self-published, who sent his book to Emerson. He got a nice letter from Emerson. Emerson didn't say, you can use my letter to open doors for you, but Whitman excerpted the letter, made what might be the first known blurb, sent it to all the newspapers around, stamped it in gold on the next edition of his book, and, you know, he was off and running. So Emily Dickinson, on the other hand, really couldn't leave the house and could barely show anybody her work. And, you know, we know what happened, you know, with her. So from the sort of early American literary roots, we have these two great, polar opposites of writers who were able to self-promote and a writer who wasn't and what happened. So I sort of see it almost the same way now. If somebody sends a book to me and I think it's just brilliant, but that person can't talk her way out of a paper bag, I will still take it on. And I'll tell the publishers, this is an eccentric. This is a person who can't leave their house, but this book is magnificent and we have something here. You have to see it. On the other hand, I might work with somebody who has 60,000 Twitter followers, and I can say other things about this person that will interest a publisher. I mean, you can create a narrative for any writer. I feel you can be creative and find a way to explain why they don't have any writing credits or how to put all their fantastic writing credits to use. You have to kind of decide who you are and where you're going to put your energy.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I'm thinking as you're saying this that of course, on one level, it implies that they're, if you're thinking as a writer, and let's say you're that eccentric person, not capable or not willing or even interested in engaging in the social, that the supposition has to be that there will be either an agent or a publisher, a mechanism for you to work with that will help you, that will publish your book or that will popularize it or do that work for you. And I guess one question I have is, do you see, and the implication of that is that there's a need for that on the author-publisher side of the equation. This is sort of the ongoing question of what is the role of a publisher, what are the roles of the intermediaries like agents as the business evolves. Of course, we don't know what will happen, but you can make suppositions about the future of publishing. It's on the supply side, clearly intermediaries are needed, but the question then is on the consumer side, the distribution side, you know, how do you see publishers dealing with the changing landscape for them, as the marketplace changes, You know, are there still going to be those larger entities able to do the kind of work that you just described for the non-social author or book?
Well, let's even take someone who is relatively connected, who can do a lot of things. Let's say, I'll use an example. Yesterday, I had a publicity and marketing meeting with an author at a publishing company. This author, prior to publication, prior to galleys even, was able to get 5 extraordinary blurbs for his book. Additionally, the previous book did pretty well, and the author was able to get multiple speaking engagements across the country that the publisher didn't have to pay for, but could supplement with media once the author got himself there. And, and this author was also arranging a symposium for his work, a 2-day symposium that could get a lot of media coverage to launch the book. So I think that's a lot to work with. So what does the publisher bring to the table? Well, they're going to hit all the national media. They're going to hit the television, radio, and print media really hard. And they also are able to do some niche marketing and some academic marketing. But because of what this book is about, there are many other niche markets that can be hit. And so what we spent the meeting doing was sort of talking about how to find them, how to get them, and whose responsibility will it be to find them and to get the lists and to put all that work together. And much of that falls to the author these days, because that's going outside the traditional lines of publicity that the publisher can do.
So as an agent, and I guess this is a key question, maybe this is probably me coloring this question, so I apologize for that in advance, but do you feel that if the author is being put in a position to do more of the work or to contribute a greater share of the effort, which is, as you said in your publishing perspective piece, a different piece of work than writing. It's a different category of activity and in some ways harder than the actual writing. Do you feel that the authors should get a bigger share of the revenue because they're doing this extra work, or is that an expectation, a fair expectation on the publisher side that the author will do it because the author wants to promote it just as much as the publisher does?
I think the author should do it, unless you sign with a company where in advance it's been made very clear that this company, their strength is marketing, their strength is reaching a certain kind of audience. For instance, if I had a book about anything about having a baby, I would want to sell it to Workman, who did What to Expect When You're Expecting, because my understanding is that they have nailed down every outlet in America that needs that book, and that they could replicate at least the distribution, if not the success. So there's that kind of thing. Should the author get more money? I don't think so. I mean, I think it's asking... Look, the margins are really small to begin with in book publishing. It's really a nickel and dime business, no matter what anybody tells you in terms of how much you can squeeze out of a single book in terms of profit. And I think that the author, the only thing I would like publishers to do, they give authors a 50% discount on their own books. I think if you have an author who's going to get out there and use those books for serious marketing purposes, that you should give them a deeper discount on those books. Because to have to pay for your own book to market it, I think that's where I get, that bothers me.
In traditional publishing contracts, authors get, 10 free copies, and then they have to buy the books at, actually pay more for the books than some retailers do.
That's right. That rankles. That definitely rankles. But the philosophical question you're asking is if the author's going to work this hard on behalf of their book, should they share in more profit? And, I think if you start selling in the hundreds of thousands of copies, obviously your next book deal will be a multi-million-dollar deal, and or you're going to go for some kind of profit sharing because you've proved yourself at that point. But until then, every author, in my mind, needs to be somewhat of an entrepreneur and understand that they are the best advocate for their book. And most books don't sell more than 5,000 copies, and most books sink like stones. And it's incredibly depressing when that happens. And what I try to tell all of my clients and all my authors when I was an editor is, you know, now the work starts. Now the work starts. The only thing you had control over is really writing a great book, but now you can also try to expose your book to as many people as possible that might want it. And then if it sort of takes off, then it's really satisfying, obviously, and you will get the royalties.
Yeah, I think that clearly the message that writers are hearing today is that they are they're more central to the process of publishing, or need to be more knowledgeable about what is required of them or what could be required of them. And as you said, I think in something of yours I read that that authors need to be more educated about the process of publishing. I always find that to be the case when I talk to writers, how it's surprising to me that they haven't either researched the business to understand how it works better or gone to find someone who can teach them how it works. Because, you know, if you, and this is the example I use, if you were creating a new cereal, you wouldn't just walk out to a Kellogg's and say, here's my new cereal, would you be interested in it? You try to figure out how the business works so that you could know best how to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that writers, and on some level I say thank God, they're just dreamers, you know? They're creative people, and they're working so hard and for so long in a kind of bubble about their work, and very few of them methodically go out and try to educate themselves about the process. People sort of dip their toe in when they're ready to send their book out, and so they go to all these writers' conferences that I speak at. And, you know, the number one question that everybody has is how to write a query letter, how to write an effective query letter. That is the question I've answered more in the last 10 years than any other.
And did you feel that the rise and advent of self-publishing tools, and this is sort of what I would call the second wave. You know, I think in the 70s and 80s, technology changed and made it more possible for writers and kind of entrepreneurial people to become publishers. And I think that's continued to happen, but I think we're now in a period where it's profligating even more, partially because of companies like Amazon's CreateSpace and Author Solutions. All these different opportunities exist for authors to self-publish or create their own businesses to become publishers. Do you feel that when you talk to writers that they're thinking about that as a viable alternative, or do they still feel that they want the publisher agreement, not only for the, you know, the sense of affirmation of their work, but also to take that burden off their shoulders? Or is it really a viable alternative for the writers you're talking to?
I think 99 out of 100 all want to be published by a mainstream publisher. They want the advance, and they want the distribution. They want to see their book when they walk into a store. And who can blame them?
Right, that's the kind of the cultural affirmation of
yeah.
You as a writer. So, but do you feel that publishers are being more selective or looking at their sales numbers when they see those books selling under 5,000 copies and saying, I'm not going to publish as many books next year? Or has that not changed?
They always say it, but they don't, you know, when you pay $150,000 for a book and it sells 5,000 copies, it's not because you planned that, right? You know.
Well, that's for sure.
It's because it didn't catch.
Right.
Why didn't it catch is the next question. You know, well, you could do a postmortem on any book and, you know, talk about it like a Monday morning quarterback. But, you know, everybody, when they spend a lot of money on a book, has the hope and expectation that it will sell enough copies to break even. But a lot of books are bought on proposal. They're not even done. And publishers prefer to buy them on proposal, where, again, even more dreaming happens, more projection, more hope, which is great, really, if you're an agent, but also it's always been an interesting thing to me that because I became a person who mostly worked with nonfiction, and I noticed that if somebody sent in a finished nonfiction book, people seemed somehow less interested in it.
Right, they kind of want to engage their own imaginations in it.
Exactly, and they want to read it quickly, and they love the case, and they love the whole thing that happens.
Right.
When it moves fast. I mean, it is very exciting when that happens. But I forget the original question.
Oh, that's right. I think the question I asked was, and I can kind of amplify it. Do you feel, because you're so, you know, you're right on the front line of dealing with publishers, so the assessment of what of how you see them changing would be really interesting to hear. You know, are things really changing on the publisher side of the equation or publisher area? You know, how are they looking at the future as you see it from talking to editors and marketing and publicity people?
Again, I don't think it's very different from when I started. It just somehow seems to feel more intense, and I think that is because of the added new factors that people don't really know what to do with. But when I came into publishing, there were a lot of independent publishers, and then after I was in publishing for 6 or 7 years, almost everyone had merged, and there were very few companies, and that really changed the face of things enormously. So fewer people wanted the same books. So, and what are those books? Those are the ones that people call the slam dunks, which are big celebrity, you know, ticket items or just big ticket items by public intellectuals or big historians, where anybody can feel there's some kind of guarantee of, you know, 50,000 copies or more out the door. And, you know, everybody needs that to keep it going, and you need your 2 or 3 runaway successes, which, again, people can't really plan for, to bankroll the whole thing. So now, that's what you see more and more, fewer books going for bigger dollars and more people chasing sort of the exact same thing.
Right. The irony there, of course, is, as you said before, that, you know, it doesn't seem like the percentage of success to failure has changed or even can change. You know, the theory might be if you published fewer books, you would be able to bring more resources to bear on them, and theoretically that should make you more successful. But if, you know, since it's always, and that may be true, but it's also always a kind of crapshoot to know what will succeed. I mean, there isn't a formula for publishing books successfully.
Well, you know, people have some good methods, and some companies are better at it than others and work really well together. Other companies, you feel them working at cross purposes or a lot of in-house competition even. I worked at 4 publishing houses, and I know it was incredible. You could see some houses just like self-sabotaging in the craziest ways, and others just, you know, really knitting together and doing a great job. And, you know, people are people, so you're going to get these kinds of, you know, extraordinary, you know, mixes of people and how well they work together.
And probably changes, or, you know, it can change too, because that group of people is not a constant. You know, it will change over time. Somebody important leaves and the chemistry changes, or, you know, a different management style comes in and maybe alters how things work.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at Doubleday for 5 years under 3 different regimes. And, you know, I'll tell you what suffered, the books. I shouldn't say that.
Well, if you had to give authors one piece of advice for the next few years, just thinking in terms of what they need to do in order to be successful, what would it be?
Just keep improving their prose. Really, I'm an old-fashioned girl. I really believe that the quality of a book will out in the end. I mean, and I'm going to brag right now, because I worked for 10 years with Patti Smith on her book, and it just got the National Book Award. And, you know, I can't imagine in my entire publishing career a greater success than that. And that's a book that publisher kept saying, have to finish, have to finish, have to finish, and it just took its time. and she refused to let it go until she felt it was as perfect as she could make it. I'm not saying it's perfect, but you know what I mean. And that was like the greatest lesson to me, because there were years when I would say to her, come on, you have to do this. And she'd just look at me like, I can't. It's not happening right now. And I do believe in quality. And I mean, sure, there are great commercial ideas and successes, and that's all really fun too. But if you are a serious literary writer or a serious writer of nonfiction or a historian, you've got to spend the time doing your research. You have to spend the time polishing your prose. And I'm not saying that's going to make it successful in the marketplace, but it's the best shot you have.
Oh, I think that's actually really important. I think people do forget that when, you know, we get distracted by all of the exterior issues, that ultimately you have to still be really good at what you do. All the rest is, as they say, dross. You know, you can't focus on the other externals. And really, I think for a lot of writers, even for publishers, that you have to be good at what you do first, and everything else follows. I think that's really good advice.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I mean
it with my heart and soul.
No, I think it's seriously an important point. It probably needs to be said over and over again, because it is so easy to be distracted, and it's so obvious on another level. And that is, you know, you can't. I think you brought up P.T. Barnum somewhere, in again one of the things of yours I read, but that doesn't apply. You know, you can't fool people. Ultimately,
mm-hmm.
you know, the quality is really what matters, and that goes back to your earlier discussion of Emily Dickinson and Walt Whitman. The key issue for both of them was the work. I mean, you know, Whitman was a great promoter, but ultimately, the reason he was a great promoter and motivated by is that he believed in his own work.
Yes.
And it turns out that it was really good. I mean, there have been a lot of great promoters whose books, if you look at the bestseller list for the last 100 years, which I've done. There are many, many number one best-selling books that today no one will read because they weren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
But
did they strike some kind of nerve at that time?
They must have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, quality in the end is not ephemeral.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point. I guess the other thing I want to ask you is, do you still write poetry?
No. I've been working for 5 years trying to crack the code of screenplays, which to me is very much like poetry, believe it or not.
Compressed language
and cutting, moving the line. And so I've been doing that, and I've absolutely loved it. I've had some very fun close calls and heartbreaks, but I'm determined to give it another 5 years or so. That's probably not even enough time, but, you know, I once heard you have to give every new business 5 years to succeed.
Well, that's what the IRS gives you before they call it a hobby. You know? So why not? No, I think that's good. Well, you like challenges, obviously, but you've also I should mention The Forest for the Trees, which is your book of advice for writers, is out in a revised edition, and I think it's has a beautiful cover for one thing.
Oh, thanks.
But and then you also blog at BetsyLerner.wordpress.com.
Yeah, or just BetsyLerner.com will get you there.
Okay, at BetsyLerner.com. And I think I want just one last thing before we end, because I know you have to go. Your blog is really not directly about always or even all the time or much of the time about advice for writers. It's really a different kind of approach for you. But, you know, what is for you the central organizing principle of your blogging?
Oh, just being naughty and just writing whatever. Everything is somewhat related to writing or publishing. I rarely do something completely off of the map. And, I mean, it could be what I did that day in publishing or what I sold or an author's book coming out. But, you know, a lot of times it's the frustrations with the business. And Often, I would say the most popular common posts are about the inner life of writers.
Right.
And the inner life of a writer is the richest tapestry you will ever find in terms of a verbal one, you know? Like, I'm sure painters and musicians also have very rich imaginative inner lives, but these people who read the blog and comment, they just kill me, and they have a lot to say about how they feel about being a writer and the challenges and what family members think and insults they've received and all the rest of it. And that's a lot what Forest for the Trees, my writing book, is about, is sort of the inner life of writers. That ever since I became an editor, that's been my complete preoccupation and obsession, because what makes writers tick is endlessly fascinating to me.
Well, it certainly comes through in the blog. I find it really entertaining to read. I admire it because I know how hard it is to be funny and entertaining and kind of engaging all the time. I think that's really hard to do. So the fact that you succeeded at it is very admirable.
No, thank you. I hope I do succeed some of the time.
Well, more than not. So that's,
you know, I guess also getting back to what we were talking about before, like, it took me a really long time to build it up to a level of a really good, you know, readership. That took at least, you know, 6 months, if not a year. And, you know, a lot of my writers will say, oh, well, I plan to put up a blog when my book comes out, or I plan to, you know, put up a website. And it's like, no. It doesn't work that way. If you really want to have something in conjunction with your book coming out, you've got to do it many months before and start linking and finding. And, you know, I'm now very much a part of a blogging community of agents and writers, and it's really fun, and I love it. And that's what you need, you know, you need to do that, but it takes a lot of time, and people think that there's instant gratification on the Internet. Yes, in some ways, but not in terms of finding an audience.
No, I think that's true. I think the lesson for, it's not just for writers, I think it's for anybody who enters the environment of the web, has to understand how much time and energy and effort it takes to engage people and to, you know, whether you're selling a product or building a business or just trying to express yourself.
Yeah.
It's a very busy, busy universe.
Yes. It really, I've learned so, one of the best parts of doing it is just how much better able I am to talk to my clients about what they need to do and what it takes, and I get ideas from these other people in the community, and it's really pretty fantastic. And I also limit myself. I don't spend more than 20 minutes per post, which I think is pretty obvious, but I think everybody with their social media needs to really put a cap on it.
Well, and also I think to do that you have to be pretty good at extemporaneous writing. I think that's really, you know, not everyone is going to be able to do that. I think, you know, the ability to write engagingly on kind of any subject of your liking, not every writer can figure that out. It's some people need more structure and they have difficulty doing what you do. So, you know, I think that's a skill and a talent that not every writer or every individual who wants to blog is going to have.
Yeah, well, it's also about having fairly low standards.
Well, yeah, but your standards are, your what you call low standards may be high standards for somebody else, because your background in publishing and writing and editing really helps you, I think, in terms of how you self-express.
Well, okay, I'll take that.
You have to. I think you have that advantage. So, well, thanks for talking to me, Betsy. It's been really fun.
Oh, thank you. Great questions. Really, really, really fun.
Good. And so this has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk. I've been talking to Betsy Lerner. She's currently an agent and has also been a writer, editor, poet, and blogger. So yes. Thanks for being on my show.
Okay, thank you.